Okay, so we're holding on Lamed Zayin Omud Beis, 12 lines from the bottom, 11 lines rather. Okay, we had a case. We were discussing various cases. So first of all, our Mishnah had talked about a case where the Yavam does Yibum, and then a baby is born afterwards, and we're not sure is that baby from the dead brother or not. If it was from the dead brother, means that Yibum shouldn't have been done. It means that Shimon, who did Yibum, has thereby committed an Aveira. But in terms of the child himself, we said is kosher, because either way, either he's Reuben's kid or he's Shimon's kid. And if he's Shimon's kid, then it means that Yibum was necessary. So therefore that works. But now we were discussing the various permutations. What do we do as far as Yerusha, where after all, this kid is a suffix, whether he's Reuben's kid or Shimon's kid. So we had so far a couple of cases about it. So the last case we had was as follows. We started with a case where Shimon and the Suffolk baby are both coming to claim Reuven's property. So Reuven, so if Yibum needs to be done, then Shimon, when he does Yibum, also inherits Reuven's property. If Yibum did not have to be done, meaning, in other words, if Reuven actually had a child, if this suffix over here is Reuven's child, then he yarshins. So that was the first case that we brought. And we said that in that case, since neither one of them is more muchzik in it than the other, then therefore yachloiku, then therefore they divide it. Now, later on, then the Gemara discusses, now what happens if at a later stage now, this suffix together with Shimon's children are coming to divide up the Yavam's Nechasim. So the Suffolk argues like this. He says, you know what, if I'm your brother, then I'm entitled to an equal share of his Nechasim together with you. If not, if I'm actually Reuben's son, then your father Shimon had no business inheriting Reuben's property at all. And in that case, I get the whole thing. So either way, he tells them I should have the right to get some of that property. So what do we do? So we said two opinions. We said Rab Abba had said kom dina, and Rab Yumi said hoder dina. Kom dina would be that we say the original division of 50-50 between the Suffolk and the Yavam is left as is. We don't unwind that. Now we say that's already a done deal, and now we have to deal with, so the half that Shimon got, does this Suffolk get a portion in it or not? Does he have a valid claim to it or not? Whereas Rabbi Yumi had said hoder dina. In this case, what we do is we unwind the whole thing. We say he has a point. Either he's the inheritor of the whole thing, or he's the inheritor of an equal share of it together with his brothers. So therefore, so no matter how you look at it, then he is indeed entitled to something, and it would mean we'd have to unwind that original din that we had where he split with Shimon 50-50, and we'd have to reconsider that as well. So that would be called hoder dina. The Trinus Adeshin, by the way, gives a reason. Most of the Rishonim paskin like Rav Abba, although there are a few of them that are Zah and a couple of others who paskin like Rav Yumiya. But the Trinus Adeshin gives a logical reason for. So Rav Yumiya's reason we understand well enough, because after all, it's true. Either the guy is Reuven's son or he's not. And if he is Reuven's son, then there should have been no reason that he got only 50% in the first place. He should have gotten 100% of Reuven's property. And if he's not Reuven's son, then he's a brother with Shimon's other sons, and he should be getting a portion together with them. So therefore, it's easy enough to understand why he says hoder dina. Why does Rab Abba, in the name of Rab, say kom dina, that we say, well, what's done is done as far as the original division, and we don't undo that? He says because once that division was done, in effect, each side was miyash about the other half. Neither of them knows that eventually there's going to be this scenario where he's going to be coming together with Shimon's children and coming to divide it. As far as they know at the time, once it's divided 50-50, that's it. So, you know, everything, things are going to continue from there permanently. And therefore, they're miyash on the other half. And therefore, there's a reason to say that we're not going to undo that. Okay, so that's where we're holding then. 11 lines from the bottom of 11 lines from the bottom of Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. So Lema Beplugta De Admon V'Rabbanon Kamichti. should we have to say that Rav Abba and Rav Yirmiyah are essentially arguing the same machlokas as Admon and the Chachamim? Admon was one of the Dayonim in Yerushalayim. Dayon Gzeiris he's called in the last parak of Ksuvos, before Churban Bayis Sheni. So the Mishnah in Ksuvos mentions a number of dinim where he disagreed with the Chachamim, and one of them is Ditnan Misha Holach leMedina Siyam. A person went overseas, va'avdalo derech sadehu, and over the years, the path to his field was lost. So he used to have, so his field is in the middle, surrounded by other people's fields. Someplace in the middle of one of those fields, there was an easement for him, for a path to him to be able to get to his field. Over the years now, that path has been lost and nobody remembers where it was. So Admon Omer Yelech B'Ktzara. So Admon says they have to give him the shortest path, that all of them together have to give him whichever one is going to be the shortest path to his field. That owner, the owner of that field, is going to have to give him that easement, because after all, he did have a path at one point. So therefore, yeah. But Chacham said no. Yikach lederach b'meya mana. He may have to buy a path, even if it costs 100 mana. In other words, they can charge him whatever they want. Oh, yifrach ba'aver. He's going to have to fly in the air. In other words, they have no requirement api halacha to give him a path. Now. Now, in the Gemara and Ksuvos, we discuss that. Why are the Chachamim saying that he has no path at all, and they can tell him, go away, we don't owe you anything? Doesn't Admon have a point? He had a path at one point. So what we're talking about over here, the case is that the four fields on the four sides belong to four different people. So therefore, any one of them that he goes to and says, my path used to be in your field, give it to me, he can say, well, how do you know? Bring proof. Maybe it was in the next guy's field over. So therefore, each of them can say it wasn't in my field. Well, then the question becomes, Ihochi my time at Admon. Well, then what is Admon thinking? He should realize that point as well. But Omar Rava, so Rava explains it like this. If you have that the fields originally belonged to four different people, and now four different people have bought them from them, so they used to belong to Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and now they sold respectively to Yisachar, Zvulun, Don, and Naphtali, or Va'abad, Asim, Koyach, Chad, or if they have four people bought from one, so originally Reuben owned all the fields, and now he sold one each to Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and Yisachar, well then, Kuba Amalek, Pligi, Demotsu, Madhulay. Then everybody agrees, even Admon, that they could push him off, because each one can say, listen, back when you were here and you had possession of that field, your path, you yourself don't know which field the path was in. Therefore, all of us, so neither of us has any more responsibility towards you than we did then. If you can find where your path is, then good. But otherwise, then you need to buy a new easement from whichever one of us you want. For price spiking, what do you mean? So they're the Mishnah, the Chacham that said they can sell them for meya mana. Yeah, if that's what it costs him to get a path to his field. Right. Ki pligi b'chad de'osim yikoyach arba. The machloka specifically is when you have the fields used to belong to four different people. Now one person bought all of them. So now you have, now when this guy in the middle comes back, all the fields around him are owned by the same person, but they used to be owned by different people. Admon sova motzi omalei mekol mokum daki gabahu. So now Admon says, listen, he can say to him, after all, no matter how you look at it, my path is somewhere in your properties, so give me a path. You pick, fine, you can pick where the path should be, so it should be as short as possible, and you're not wasting good agricultural land, but still, you owe me a path someplace. Of Rabbanan Savri, whereas the Chachamim say, no, because the guy who now surrounds him can say, "E shaskas shaskas." If you're quiet, then be quiet. And what does that mean? Meaning Rashi says that I won't overcharge you for the. I won't overcharge you. You will have to buy. You will have to buy access rights from me, but I won't charge you 100 mana for it. Tosfos actually says that no. What it means is "E shaskas shaskas" means you won't get anything. And he says, if you're going to try to take me to Beis Din and harass me about this, then I always have the option, Mahadana Shtar Lamarayhu, I could return the deeds the Shtari Mecha Chomemker, that I bought these fields to their original owners, and it's four different owners. Well, I must say, then for sure you won't be able to do anything with them, because each one will have a valid claim that you have is not in my property. So in other words, so according to Rashi, he's telling him, leave me alone, and fine, I'll sell you a path at a more fair market value. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck and you won't be able to get anything at all. And according to Tosfos, he's telling him, listen, you're stuck no matter what. I don't owe you anything at all. And if you keep on bugging me, then I'm going to send it back to the four owners. And then for sure you don't have any recourse. So in other words, I bought this.
I don't pass through it.
Well, no, right. In other words, he's saying, right. I didn't know when I bought it, but right.
I'll return it to these guys. Yeah. I don't want your path going through my field.
Yeah. I mean, Tosfos actually points out now what you have is in the case where we just mentioned a couple of lines ago that if it originally belonged to one person and now he sold it to four different people, then each of them can be doicha him. Well, why can't we say that? Why shouldn't we say that at least that one should have to refund the price of a path? There was a path in it after all, and so it comes out. Let's say, for example, let's say the four fields surrounding total 100 acres, and let's say if we figure out the length of the shortest path, it would total let's say 1 acre. So why shouldn't he have to refund that 0.1 acre or that 1 acre or whatever? And the answer is Tosfos says, because he can argue, to begin with, I only sold what I own in it, namely, in other words, to begin with, it was meant to be that the easement wouldn't be included. Not my fault that over the years it's gotten forgotten. Anyway, so now that we understand the machlokas of Adman and the Chachamim, isn't that similar to what we're talking about over here, where you have the Suffolk and the Suffolk and the children of the Yavam, and we're discussing the question: do we unwind the original din, the Hodder dinner, or do we say come dinner, we leave the original division as it is, and now we're working on the basis of that? Well, Lamer of Abba Dama Kedabanan Verbiyumi Adama Kadman. Does that mean that Rav Abba agrees with the Chachamim? So just like the Chachamim say, the new owner, the one owner of the four surrounding fields, can say, tough luck, you don't have any recourse with me, and if you want to, then you're going to have to deal with four different people. The same way Rav Abba is saying that we're not undoing the original division over here. Whereas Rabbi Yirmiyah, who says that we undo the original division, would go like Admin, who says that he can't say I'll return them to the four owners. He says, after all, no matter what, you owe me a path somewhere. The same way over here, the Suffolk is saying, no matter what, I get some of this property. Okay. Okay. So the case with Suffolk and the Yavam, or the case of the Suffolk and the Yavam was like this: Shimon had done Yavam with Reuven's wife. But we don't know whether he was supposed to have done Yibum, because afterwards a baby was born, and we don't know if that baby is Reuven's or Shimon's. Now, years later, when Shimon himself dies, and we want to divide up, so right now, actually, we're talking about the case that we want to figure out what are we doing with Reuven's property after, we're figuring out what we're doing with Shimon's property.
The
second one, the one who did Yibum.
Right, now he has the property.
So in other words, the Suffolk is arguing as follows. He's saying, listen, as far as Reuven's property, I got half, and really I think I should have gotten the whole thing, because I claim that I'm Reuven's son.
Right,
now, he got half of Reuven's. Because that was an earlier stage of it. That's what we're saying. We had an earlier stage where it was only Shimon and the Suffolk. So the Suffolk baby got half and Shimon got half because neither one was more Moshe. Now, Shimon has his own property.
He
might be Shimon's son, exactly. So he's claiming, now look, whichever way you look at it, if I'm not Shimon's son, meaning I'm Reuven's son, then half of what your father, then part of what your father owns came from Reuven and it should have been mine all along.
Right.
And if you, and on the other hand, if I'm one of Shimon's sons together with you, then I get a portion together with you. So now the question is, do we unwind that original division that would be Hodur Dinah, which is what Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying, or do we say, come dinner, what's done is done, and we only have to, so in other words, the half that, so do we say, in other words,
if
that
it was a Suffolk, he got part of Reuben's property.
Right. But forget about, one second, forget about what this
means. Only because maybe he was Reuben's son.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we stop interrupting? It's impossible to understand what Alexander is saying.
Okay, we're trying to explain it over here. Questions are necessary sometimes in order to understand it more clearly. So let me explain. So yeah, you can also ask questions if you want, you know. It's not an easy case. Okay. Forget about the half that the Suffolk took already. He's not arguing that it should be taken away from him, obviously. Nobody's arguing it should be taken away from him. What's going on over here is Reuben. Okay. Reuben
has this interruption. It's impossible to understand this fear.
Arsha, we're trying to explain over here, okay? If somebody doesn't
I'm not saying, but people should not interrupt you.
Okay, you shouldn't interrupt, please, okay? If you have a question, by all means, but yeah. Okay, anyway. So the deal is like this.
Nobody should interrupt.
Avraham Moshe, I'm trying to explain over here, and you are interrupting right now. Please don't.
I'm not the only one interrupting. I'm just telling you nobody should interrupt. That's it.
I would really like not to have to kick you off this, but I may have to. So please, yeah. Okay. So, as I was saying, Shimon, to begin with, got half of Reuben's property. The Suffolk is arguing that shouldn't have happened. I'm Reuben's son. I should have gotten the whole thing. Now, eventually, Shimon's children are coming to divide Shimon's property. The Suffolk comes along and says, listen, however you look at it, I should be entitled to some of this property. Either I'm entitled to all of it, namely the half that Shimon got from Reuben, he shouldn't have gotten because I'm Reuben's son. Or you want to argue that Shimon wanted to argue to begin with that I'm not Reuben's son, that I'm his son. Well, if I'm his son, I'm entitled to part of his estate together with you. So that's the come dinner or harder dinner that we're talking about with you. Do we undo the original division and start over again? Do we say that we have to consider the half that Shimon got from Reuben, that is also up for discussion? Or do we say the fact that he got that half is a given, it's as if it was his property all along and there was never any Suffolk on it, and the only question is now whether the Suffolk is getting a portion of it together with the other children, in which case, if that were the case, then they could tell him, listen, bring proof that you're Shimon's son and you would be entitled to get some. If not, Hamotzi Mechavel Avaraya, because we're the Mechzokim, because we're Shimon's sons. So now, comparing that to the case of Admon and the Chachamim, where Admon is saying, no matter what, I have a path through one of your four fields, and the Chachamim are saying that no, because he's saying I could return it to the other ones. That seems to be a similar machlokas to Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Abba. That's what we're saying. So, Amalach Rabbi Abba, I'm not the Amri, I feel like Admon. So Rabbi Abba can say no. What I'm saying works even like Admon. Ad kan l'ka'ama Admon ha'sam, ela mishum do'amalei memanafshach, da'uki chad gabochu. After all, what is Admon saying? He's saying that no matter what, I have a path someplace by you. In other words, it's the Tainet's body. He knows. The middle one is saying, I know for a fact that I have a path for you. Aval hocha mi ikal me mahochi. Here, you can't say that. He doesn't know, after all. He's coming on the basis of two different tainus. He's coming on the one hand, I might be Reuben's son. On the one hand, I might be Shimon's son. It's true that he's saying that no matter what, I get some of Shimon's property. So in other words, he's saying the outcome is going to be the same. The outcome is regardless, whichever possibility is true, I should get part of Shimon's property. But that those different outcomes are resulting from two different underlying arguments. One being that I'm Reuben's son, and one being that I'm Reuben's son, and I was entitled to all of it to begin with. And the other being that I'm Shimon's son, and I'm entitled to a portion of his property. So that's not comparable. So that it is, after all, only a tiny shema. He is arguing vaday, I get part of this property, but he's arguing shema because the basis for that argument is different in each case, whether he's basing himself on I'm Reuben's son or he's basing himself on I'm Shimon's son. So therefore, it's not the same. Not because he can't return. That's going to be the next thing the Gemara is going to say. No, just because the difference is, in the case of Admon and the Chachamim, the middle guy has a tainus bori. Here he only has a tainus shema.
Yeah.
But Reb Yumia on Malacha, not the Amri Afilu Rabbanan, vice versa, Reb Yumia can say that what I'm saying works even according to the Chachamim. Ad kan leka Amri Rabbanan hasem el mishum de amale is shaskas shaskas. After all, the Chachamim are saying the logic that he says before, the surrounding landowner can say, if you're quiet, then you're quiet, and we'll deal. V'iloy, and if not, ma adana shtar l'marayhu, then I'm going to return the shtaris to the respective owners that I bought them from. V'loy matzis l'ishtu'uya dinu v'adayu. You're not going to be able to take them to base in, because everyone has a valid reason, even according to Admon, to say that you don't have any claim against them. Here there are no shtaris to be able to return. So there's nothing that the sons of Shimon can say that we have a way of making it that it should be impossible for you to press your claim. Whereas in that case, the Chacham was saying, I do have a way, I can return the shtaris. So therefore, it comes out that the machlokas of Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yemiya does not map neatly onto the machlokas of Adman and the Chachamim. Either one of them could hold like either one of the Tanoim. Okay, here's another case. Safek v'yavim shebo lachlik v'nichsei sava. Suppose now, here's another case, again involving the Safek and the Yavam. Forget about there's no children of the Yavam at the moment. But now we're dealing with, they want to divide the property of the elder, of the Yaakov, who's the father of Reuven and Shimon. So here's the scenario, in other words, for those who are still following with the diagrams, diagram 161. So Reuven and Shimon are brothers, the sons of Yaakov. Reuven died, Shimon did Yibum. Again, we don't know whether it was a valid Yibum or not. A child was born, we don't know if it's Reuven or Shimon's child. Now Yaakov has died, and the question is, who is inheriting him? So there's two ways of looking at it. If the Suffolk is Reuven's son, then he stands in place of Reuven. Therefore, he gets the portion that would have gone to Reuven, and Shimon gets his own portion, and therefore they each get half of Yaakov's property. On the other hand, if the Suffolk is Shimon's son, then Shimon's inheriting the whole thing, because there's no other brother to inherit. And the Suffolk himself is not getting anything. Shimon is getting 100%, and only when Shimon dies, then we're going to be talking about what the Suffolk inherits. We're talking about inheriting from Yaakov. So, Safek v'yavam shebo lachlik v'nichsei sava. Safek omer hai gabra b'misnehu. So the Safek argues, I am the son of the dead brother, Reuven, upaugadidihu, therefore half of the property belongs to me because I'm taking over with a property that would have gone to my father, Reuven, and instead I inherit in his place. Therefore, I get half and you, Shimon, get half. The Yavam Omer at Broididia, whereas the Yavam Shimon argues, you're my son, the less lachalimidi, you don't get anything because I inherit from Yaakov. Only when I'm gone, then we can talk about what you're inheriting. Well, then have a Yavam Vadai, the Suffolk. Well, then the Yavam has a Tainus Vadai on this property because he knows for sure that he's Yaakov's son. The Suffolk only has a Suffolk, whether he's Reuven's son or Shimon's. Therefore, the ain't Suffolk, Motzimide Vadai, the usual rule is that the Suffolk cannot take away from the Vadai, meaning, in other words, therefore, Shimon ends up getting the whole thing because unless the Suffolk can bring proof that he is actually Reuven's son. Rashi points out that before in the Sugya, we had what Rav Masharshi had said, that both of them are Suffolk. But over there, the difference is that over there, even though there was a Suffolk, the fact is he did have a right to some of the Nechosim, no matter how you look at it. And still, we considered it wasn't considered Vada because he doesn't know, like we said before, from the Koyach of whom he's coming. He doesn't know whether his claim is on the basis of being Reuven's son or Shimon. Here, we don't even have that. Here it's even less than that because we don't even know whether he has a claim to the Nechosim at all. If Shimon is correct and the Suffolk is his son, then the Suffolk has no right to any of the Nechosim at all. He may get it eventually after Shimon dies. You could look at that. Fine. Well, that'll be the previous case. So now comes the next case, actually, which is related to the previous one. So now we have the next case, which is diagram 162, where we have the same scenario, but now the twist is, now the twist is that that ship that that so now the twist is Reuven has died, Shimon has died, and Yaakov, their father, has died. So now the question is, now the Suffolk is coming to divide together with Shimon's children. So now the question is the Suffolk Reuven's son? In that case, then he's entitled to half by virtue of Reuven, and the other son and the sons of Shimon between them are entitled to the other half by virtue of their father. We're talking about, in other words, that Reuven and Shimon died while Yaakov was still alive, and then Yaakov died last. Yaakov is the father of Reuven and Shimon. Is it that the Suffolk is one of Shimon's children, and therefore they divide, each of them gets one third?
Yeah.
So that's the question. Yeah,
because he's the Bechor.
Forget Bechor. Because actually the truth is, you mentioned that yesterday, if a girl is born first. But no, I think if a girl is born first, we still, in terms of Yerusha, we ignore that, because girls don't get Yerusha anyway, and therefore, unless it's only girls, like Tzlop.
But
no
Bechor.
So, no, but in other words, he's not a Bechor Lekoyen, but he's still a Bechor Lenachla. There's a difference. A better example would be, let's say he was born by C-section. Where they was not considered a Bechor Lenachla.
Those days.
Let's say they were twins and they were both born by C-section, and then the mother and then the mother died. Fine, whatever. The point is, again, so you have one way of looking at it is the Suffolk gets half because his father Reuven was one of Yaakov's two sons, and the sons of Shimon get the other half, or the other way of looking at it, each of them gets a third,
right,
because each of them is a son of Shimon.
And they can't do DNA testing.
Forget it, yeah. So, Suffolk, Uvnei Yavam Shabol Lachlik the Nichse Sava. So, the Suffolk and the children of the Yavam are coming to divide up Sava, Yaakov's property. Suffolk Omer Hahu Gabra Ba Misnehu. The Suffolk argues that I am the son of Reuven, who died first, and then Yibum was done with his wife, which Yibum shouldn't have been done, by the way, because I'm his son. Therefore, half belongs to me. The sons of the Yavam say, you're our brother. So you only get a portion together with us. So what we do is as follows. So now let's say again, to keep things simple, we're talking about that Shimon had only two sons and neither of them is a Bechor. So that's the calculation the Gemara is going to give us now is going to be based on that. Obviously, if Shimon has more sons or if there is a Bechor, then we have other considerations to deal with. But anyway, so... what happens is like this thing. So the half that he admits to them that they're entitled to, they take that. He's not claiming that I have 100% of the property. He's claiming that at most I only have 50%, because after all, I'm a son of Reuven and you guys are sons of Shimon. Reuven and Shimon each would have gotten 50%. So therefore, he's only claiming 50% to begin with. So they take that 50% and divide it among themselves. Tilta de Kamoidu Lay Shokal. Meanwhile, they're admitting to him that he is entitled to a third monafshech, because either he's Reuven's son and gets half, or they're arguing you're Shimon's son, but you get a third, because there's three of us altogether, including you. So he gets that one third. So far we've accounted for a half plus a third, which is 5/6 of the property. Now, what do we do with the remaining sixth? Poshlahu Danka, we have left 1/6. A danka technically is the name of a small coin that they used in Babel in those days, but it was 1/6 of a dinar or something, and therefore the Gemara often uses it to mean 1/6 in general. Sort of like in English, you know, the word quarter means 1/4 of something and also a quarter dollar. Anyway, have a mum and a mutal besafik b'chokin. So that is money that's besafik, and neither of them is more muchsik in it than the other, therefore they divide it. So the upshot is then that the Suffolk ends up getting a third plus, ends up getting one third plus 1/12, which is about 41%, a third plus 1/12. No, because we have 1/6 that he divides together with the other two. So he takes half of the sixth plus he takes the third that they admitted to him. So he gets 1/3 plus 1/12, which equals about 41%. And they divide between the two of them. The rest of them, they have about 58% to divide between them, and the two of them, each of them gets about 29%.
They get 1/24 each.
1/12. No. Well, yeah. So each of them gets it right. So between the two of them, he's getting 1/3 of the property. They have the remaining 2/3. Yeah. Then in addition, they also have, plus that 2/3, they have another 1/12, and they divide it between the two of them, and therefore each of them is ending up with about 29% of the, with about 29 or 30% of the original.
So he gets 7/12.
So he gets 5/12. So he gets 5/12.
He gets a third plus a 12.
That's what he's saying.
He gets 5/12.
Yeah. And each one of them gets that. So then between the two of them, they have 7 12. So each of them gets 3.5 12. Yeah, so 7 24. Yeah.
7 24.
Which would be, like I said, around 29%. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Shemenes Yavam Shenotlo Lanachasim. Suppose that while the woman is waiting for Yibum, she inherits property. Let's say, for example, she only had sisters, like Benos Tzlachod, so therefore she's inheriting from her father. But she's a Shemeres Yavam. So now what happens is, so the Gemara is assuming, we're going to assume right now that it's talking about that it happened while she was a Shemeres Yavam. We're going to revisit that in the Gemara. So now both Bishama and Bishilul agree that before Yibum is done, she can sell or buy and do whatever she wants with this property, and it all is valid because she hasn't done Yibum yet. Mesa, now what happens if she dies? What do we do with her ksuba, which she had from her original husband, which hasn't been collected yet? Who does it go to? And what happens to the nechosim that go in and out with her, namely the nichsim log? Nichsim, later on in the Masechta, we're going to discuss in more detail, but you have, there's two kinds of property that a woman can bring into a marriage. There's nichsim log and nichsit tzoin barza. Nichsim lug is that the goof of it belongs to her, and her husband is entitled to the payrus of it, to the proceeds of it. So let's say, for example, if it was a field, then he gets the fruit, he gets the produce of it. If it was a hotel, then he's entitled to the receipts from the hotel, etc. And then there's nichsit sain barzo, where he actually owns them, but he's responsible to pay her for any loss that they incurred over the time of their marriage. We'll talk about it in more detail later on in the Samachs. We'll talk about it in more detail about what happened with nichsit sain barzo. Anyway, so what happened? So forget about nichsit sain barzo. Nichsim lug. Where the actual property belongs to her, and it's called nechnasim v'yotzim ima, because when she gets married, they come into the marriage It's called nechnasim v'yotzim ima, because when she comes into the marriage, it comes in with her, and when she goes out, when she dies, who gets divorced, then it goes with her. So now she herself died. What do we do with it? So Bishama says the yoshim of the husband divided. So what it is actually like this. It's a suffix, given that she's a shemeres yavam. It's a suffix whether she's considered married to the yavam. So he's entitled to half, and a husband inherits from his wife. So therefore, the yavam is going to get half of her property, and im yoshiab, and the other half is going to go to her father's yoshim, because if she wasn't married and she died without children, then her father would be yashining her, just like in general, a father yashins his children if they die during his lifetime.
So it goes up.
So here we have, on the other hand, she might be married to the yavam. Because if they had done Yibum, then she is married to him, period. But now it's only Shemeres Yavam. She's only waiting for Yibum. The Zika, the Yibum hasn't been done yet. So Bishamai says each one gets half. Or Bishilimim, Nechosim, the Chaskosin. Bishil will say no, that all the Nechosim remain in the Chazaka of whom they are now. Namely, Ksuba b'cheskas Yoshe Abal, the Ksuba remains in the chazaka of the inheritors of the husband, because the Ksuba, after all, is the husband promises the wife that he's going to give her X amount as her Ksuba, so therefore that's considered in his chazaka. If she dies during the marriage, then it reverts to him, so therefore it's considered in their chazaka already. On the other hand, the nichsim alug are in the chazaka of her father's yosh, of her father or of her father's yoshim, because it belonged to her. Rashi points out that Beis Shammai does agree about the ksuba. The whole machlokas is only about the nichnasim of ayotzim ima, only about the nichsim alug. So that's the thing. So Beis Shammai says yachloku in both of them. And Basilo, so rather, Beis Shammai says the Ksuba is Becheskas Abal, and the Nechosim, and Nechnosim, the Yotimima, they have to split. Basilo is saying the Ksuba goes to the husband and his Yoshim, the Yavam and his Yoshim, that is, and the Nichsim Alug go to, and the Nichsim Alug go completely to the father's side.
Even though
He couldn't give her a get. If he gave her a chalit, no. So the, actually, so here's the point, actually. We're going to discuss this in the Gemara, but the idea is, in other words, when you think about it, like this, the Gemara is going to explain that there's a suffix whether as a Shemeres Yavam is she considered like an Arusa or like an Asua, and actually Hagoyes HaBach explains over there that, that she's actually even in a way weaker than an Arusa, and a logical reason for that is because an Arusa, generally speaking, is going to result in Nisuin. Here, after all, there's only Zika. You don't know if it's going to result in Yibum or Chalitza. So that might be a reason to say that there is that the Yavam has a very weak claim to her Nechasim.
Stronger, yeah.
What? You can say that she's stronger too. So that's, we're going to discuss that in the Gemara. What, yeah. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Konsa harei ki ishta l'chol dover. If he actually marries her, if he does yibum with her, then she's considered like his wife for all purposes. Ovovad, she takes subal nichse. By the Arishan, the subah has to be paid out of the estate of her first husband, because that's how it is. When her husband died, and then she collects the subah from his estate. Kansa means a Miloshin koinus, Miloshin really brought her in.
Even though the marriage continues, sort of taken.
In a certain sense, the marriage continues, but nevertheless, the ksuba is still, yeah. So actually, we're going to discuss that point in the Gemara. We're going to see in the Gemara why she doesn't need a ksuba from the second husband. We'll get to that tomorrow. That's the same. So the Gemara asks, Maishna Resha de like Pligi or Maishna Sefer de Pligi, why is it in the first part of the Mishnah, where she's still alive, then we're saying Beth Shammai and Beth are both agreeing that she can do whatever she wants with the Nechasim, and whereas in the Sefer, we're saying we don't say that Hu Yoshim take it over completely. What's the difference? Why in the second half of the Mishnah, when she died, are we saying that Beth Shammai is saying that the Yoshe HaBaal, the Yoshim of the Yavam, who she was a Shemeres Yavam with, have a certain claim on the property? Whereas in the Resha, they're not saying that. Because the difference is, says Ula, the Resha is talking about when she was Nafla, when she fell for Yibum, meaning when her husband died, she was only in Arusa. She hadn't yet done Kiddush, she had only done Kiddushin with her husband, they hadn't yet done Nisuin. Whereas the Sefer is she was already fully married. So therefore, with a regular Arusa, even a regular Arusa, we're going to say soon that Beth Shammai says that she's able to sell property. So over here, it's even less than an Arusa. She's only a skuka. So therefore, she can do whatever she wants with it. Beth Hillel says that if she's a Vaday Arusa, then fine, she shouldn't sell Lachila, but still, the Yevet, if she did, then it's good. Here, she's only a Suffolk Arusa. So even Beth Hillel would agree that she can do whatever she wants. Because a suffix is not reason enough to take away her right to do what she wants with the property. But because Sava Ola, Zikas Arusa Oisa Suffolk Arusa, Ola holds that when you have a Zika of she was an Arusa, then that makes her now the equivalent of a Suffolk Arusa, Zikas Nisuin, Oisa Suffolk Nisua. And a Zika that came from Nisuin makes her a Suffolk Nisua. So that's why we have the difference of what she can do as far as the disposition of the property. Meaning, Zikas Arusa Oisa Suffolk Arusa, he explains like this. If she has a Zika that's created when she's an Arusa, so that makes her a Suffolk Arusa, which, as we just said, we're going to say in a second, that Beth Shammai says she has rights to do whatever she wants with the property as an Arusa. So therefore now, as a Suffolk Arusa, all the more so she has those rights. And the Isak Ledach Vaday Arusa, because you have to say, says Ula, that it's a Suffolk Arusa, because if it was that she became a Vaday Arusa as a result of the Zika, then what do you mean? Modim Basil Shemecheres Venesenes Vakayim, how could Basil be agreeing that she can sell and do whatever she wants with the property? Vahatnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Ksubas, Nafla Nechosim Mishinis Arusa, if a regular case, forget about Yibum, a woman became an Arusa, now she inherited property. So let's say again, her father died and she and her sister is inheriting him. Beth Shammai Oyim Timker. Beth Shammai says she can sell whatever she wants. It doesn't have any, her husband doesn't have any rights to it yet. Or Beth Hillel Oyim Loy Timker. Beth Hillel says she should not, because after all, her husband is going to have some rights to it once they finish getting married. They do both agree that if she did sell or she did give away, then it is valid. So now, in our Mishnah, if we said that, again, the case was she was Arusa to Reuven, Now Reuven died. Now she's a Shemeres Yavam Diyavim to Shimon. If you said that she's considered a Vada Yarusa to Shimon, then Beis Hillel would say, like they do in Ksubas, that she can't sell the property. But here in the Mishnah, we're saying Modim Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, that she could. She could do whatever she wants. That implies, therefore, that she can't be any more than a Sufik Arusa. El Shmamina Zikas Arusa, Oisa Sufik Arusa. Then Ula continues, Zikas Nisua Oisa Sufik Nisua. Furthermore, we can say, we see from our Mishnah that a Zika created from Nisuin makes her a Sufik of a Sufik Nisua. The Isak Gadach Vada Nisua. And the reason we have to say that is because if we said that she's considered definitely married to Shimon, even though the Yibum was not taking place yet, then how could we say Bes Shama Om Yachloiku Yosha Baal Im Yosha Ab? Then why would Bes Shammai say that her fathers and her Yavam's Yoshim split up the property? Vatnan. The same Mishnah there in Ksubas continues, Naflava Nachasim Mishin Misis. If she inherits property after she gets married, Eilava Eilava Moedim, She Machrava Nasna, Sha Baal Moedim Yad Alakochas. Then both of them agree that if she sells or gives away, then the husband preempts that because he had rights to the payrus, and therefore that he can take it away from the buyers. So therefore, Bes Shammai in our Mishnah wouldn't say that the Yoshe Ha'av have any claim to the property. Ela Shmamina. So Ela Shmamina Zikas Nesua Oisa Sofik Nesua. So therefore, you see that therefore, Ula says, so that's the difference. The two cases of the Mishnah are talking about where she was an Arusa versus where she was a Nesua. So now she has Zika. Now she's a Shemeres Yavam. So now, in each case, we say she's respectively a Sufik Arusa or a Sufik Nesua. So as a Sufik Arusa, Bet Shammai, who allows her to sell property, even if she was Vadei Arusa, would certainly allow it over here. And Basila would say, listen, over there we say if she's Vadei Arusa, then not. But here she's only Sufik Arusa, so let her go ahead and do whatever she wants. Because after all, it could be that eventually she'll be, eventually there'll be Chalitza. Right, so that's Tosfos mentions over here that Tosfos says over here when we say that she might possibly be considered vadai. Tosfos says because the goof is hers. So here's where Agoris Abach says that when we say that she's a Sufik Nesua or not, she might even be weaker than a Sufik Arusa. So he doesn't give a reason why, but the Achronim talk about the reason that I was saying before, because after all, it's with a regular Arusa, the likelihood is there's going to be Nesuin. With Zika over here, it's just as possible that there'll be Chalitza as there'll be Yibum.
You can't say, I don't want to be.
Yibum, not really, because it can be done by Al-Kocha. Chalitza, I think she does have, Chalitza, she may have the option, I'm not sure. We'll talk about it later on in the Masechta, when we get into the Dinim of Chalitza, we'll talk about that. But anyway. Okay, so that's it. So that's Ula's point. However, Omalei Rabba, but Rabba argues to Ula, he says, in that case, ad miflegi begufo l'achamisa, then in that case, then why, then instead of Bes Shammai and Bes Hillel arguing about the case, we're asking what happens with the guf of the property, and we're talking about what happens after she dies, miflegu b'chayeh or l'peiris. Why don't they instead argue about if she still is alive, and what do we do with the peiris? Where Bes Shammai should say that if she's a Sufik Nesua, if she was completely married, if she had Nesuin with Reuven, and now she's a Shemeres Yavam to Shimon, and we're saying she's Sufik Nesua, then Bes Shammai would say that because we have a Sufik, then the Yavam split the Paris together with her. If she was Nesua, then he would be entitled to them for sure, but because it's a Sufik, then he gets only half. And Besuva would be saying, Nechos and Nechaskasa. Since the Mishnah instead presents the case that we're talking about where she died, that means that it has nothing to do with Arusa versus Nesua. It must be that in the Resha, rather it's the fact that she's alive that says that Bes Shammai says that therefore she has a stronger chazaka. So namely, Ela Omer Rabba, Aidi Ba'aidi did not lachshi Nesua. Both cases are talking about where the Nefila Yibum took place when she's in the sewer, meaning she was already married to Reuven. She was fully married, then not just Arison, but Nisuin.
For the first marriage
we're talking about. Yeah. V'zikas nesua oisa sofik nesua. So we're going to say, yeah, fine. We'll agree with what Ullah said, that a zika of a nesua makes you be sofik nesua. But the difference is we don't have to resort to, we're talking about arusa versus nesua. We're all talking about within nesua. But reisha di ihi kaima, in the reisha, she's still alive. Havala ihi vadai ve'inhu sofik. So she is a vadai. And the yavam, or his yoshim, are only a sofik, whether they're entitled to it, because he's a sofik nesua. So therefore, so the ein suffix makes him a vadai. Like we said before, suffix doesn't take away from a vadai. So therefore, in the resha, everybody agrees that she still has full rights to the that she still has full rights. Sefer, the mesa, whereas in the sefer, because she died, so neither one is more mosa. Kalola boin lirash, valola boin lirash. Each group is coming to Yavshin, her father's family and her yavam's family. Therefore, v'yachloku, therefore they divide it. So now what happens is, according to Beis Shammai, what happens is that we say that she's a suffix, so therefore it's Yachloku. Beis Hillel says that since the Nichsi Malug were already in the Chazakah of her family, because where are the Nichsi Malug coming from to begin with? They're coming from something that was in her family, and then she Yashin or something. So therefore it was already in their Chazakah, and therefore they continue to have that Chazakah in it. Esve Abaya. So Abaya asks Rabba, Ul Beis Shammai ain't suffik motzi midei vadai. So you're telling me that according to Beis Shammai, a suffik cannot take away from a vadai? Because that's what you're saying over here, that because it's a suffik, when she's alive, then she has a vadai claim on this property, and the yavam only has a suffik claim, because she's suffik nesua. So you're telling me that Beis Shammai says that therefore they have no claim on it. We learn in a Mishnah in Bava Basra, Nafal Abayis Olaval Aviv. If a house collapsed on a person together with his father, we don't dafka mean a house collapsing. We're giving that as an example where two people died and we don't know which one died first. So it's on him and his father, or Olaval Merishav, or anybody else that he could inherit from. So let's say, for example, he had an uncle who didn't have children, we had a brother who didn't have children, or whatever. So he's yashining for him. So Vahoyu Olaf Subas Isho Balchoy. Now, suppose there exists an outstanding suvas isha that has to be paid, or an outstanding baal chol. So now the case is, in other words, the son has no nechassim of his own. His father has nechassim. So now the son owes for a suvas isha, or the son owes baal chol. Now forget about wives right now. Now we're talking, yeah, the son, well, the wife would be, right, look, so, right. So the wife would be the son's. Yeah, we're talking about the son had previously had a wife who died or he divorced her. So he owes her ksuba, or he owes people money. He doesn't have anything to pay right now. But now, if he inherited from his father, then he has. So now what happens is, Yoshe Ha'av Oymim Ha'ben Mesrishin, So the other inheritors of the father argue that the son died first. So when he died, he hadn't inherited anything. Therefore, then the father died. So they're arguing, therefore, so there's nothing to pay the ksuba or the or the bali chovis from. The son never inherited anything. The father is not responsible to pay them. So therefore, sorry, you guys don't get anything. We, the father's inheritors, get everything. The father's other sons or whatever, get everything. The Baal Chovis, meanwhile, argue that maybe the father died first and then the son. So the father died, the son yashined him. Now the son died. Well, therefore, it's the son's property at this point. He yashined it. Therefore, we're entitled to collect. So Beis Shammai says that they divide it up. Beis Hillel says the nechassim remain in the chazakah of that they were before. They were in the chazakah of the father before. They remain in his chazakah, and therefore the Baal Chovis don't have any claim. The Hahacha Yoshea Av Vadir Baal Chov Safik. Here we have that the father's Yoshim are Yarshining is more of a definite thing. That the Baal Chovis get is only a suffix, because it depends which one died first, because he's suffix or motzi midevade. And still, Beis Shammai is saying that they get half, that the Baal Chovis get half, even though their claim is only a suffix. So you see, suffix is motzi midevade. So why in our Mishnah Beis Shammai saying that not, if we're assuming we're talking about that the Yavama is still alive, and therefore her claim to the property is a vade, and the Yavam's is only a suffix? The answer is no, because that's different. The answer is that Beshamai holds that a shtar that's going to be collected is considered to a certain extent as if it's already collected. There is a shtar over here, there's a ksuba, or there's a shtar choiv, as the case may be. Therefore, that's considered that they have more, that's considered, therefore, that they have more of a chazak on it. In our Mishnah, we're talking about there's no shtaris involved. All you have is she owns property, and the Yavam is claiming the right to part of it because she's suffic nesua to him, so his suffic doesn't take away from her vade. But over there, they have a shtar, and that's different. The fact that they have a shtar makes it considered to a certain extent as if they had already collected it. The ksuba or the shtar choy, respectively, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, and we're not tamra. Well, where do we see this, that the Beshamai holds such an idea? It's none. We learn in a Mishnah in Sota. We have a case over there. We have a case over there where a woman is a Sota, and there's a Mesu Bale and Adshalei Shasu. Suppose the husband dies before she drinks the Sota water. So now, once there was Kinui or Stira, she becomes also to her husband until they drink the Sota water. And if she can't drink the soda water, then she loses her ksuba. She forfeits her ksuba because the whole thing was caused by her behavior, after all. So therefore, and now what happens is if her husband dies before she drinks the water, Beshamai says she does get her ksuba. She doesn't have to drink. It's true that there's a shema that she might have been mizana, but so she can't drink the sota water because her husband's no longer alive and it has to be behavior ishes ishtel akoyim. But Beshamai says she's still entitled to her ksuba. Vesilo says either they have to drink or they don't get their ksuba. And what does that mean? Oishoy says, what do you mean? Either they drink. There's no option for them to drink. Behavior ishes ishtel amarachman of aleka. Everybody agrees that it has to be the husband brings his wife to the Koyan, to the Bis Mikdash, and you don't have because he's dead. No, we're talking about that he died before she was given the drink. Before doesn't matter. Behavior is just still means, in other words, that the whole Sota procedure has to take place while he's alive. He has to be there. Well, he doesn't have to necessarily be there, but he has to at least be alive. So Ella, what Basil means, what it means rather is because she can't drink, because of that mute from the Basil, therefore Basil says she forfeits her ksuba. No, but it's her fault that there was stira. He warned her, I'll be susri, mishplani, and she did, so therefore, yeah. Anyway, so now so again, let's focus on Beshamai. Beshamai is saying she gets her ksuba. If you're saying So why should you get a ksuba? Bahacha the suffiku. After all, isn't that a suffik? Suffik zanai, suffik loy zanai. It's a suffik whether she was mizana or not. Which, if she was mizana, and we have evidence of it, then she does forfeit her ksuba. Because he's suffik or moitzim in the vade. And Beshamai is saying that still the suffik was able to take away from the vade, and she's able to collect her ksuba. Shmamina ela shmamina shtar ha'oimid ligbis ki gavu yami. Therefore, that demonstrates that Beshamai must say it's not just a matter of suffik. She has a shtar ksuba, therefore that strengthens her position. And therefore, even though there is a suffik over here, still that's not strong enough to take away what we have in the shtar. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Abaya lois v'meha. So when Abaya first brought up the question to Rabba, so let's review. Rabba had said that we're talking about over here, it's a matter of whether she's alive or whether she's dead, and it's a matter of suffik moitzim midei vade. So what did Abaya do? We're now in Seder Noshin. Abaya could have used that Mishnah in Sota to ask on him. And the answer would have been, how can we say that the suffix of the Sota is moitzim midei vade and she can collect uksuba? Instead of taking from a Mishnah in our Seder of Noshim, instead he went all the way to Seder Nezikin and took a Mishnah in Bava Basra. So the question is, Abaya loisve meha. Why didn't Abaya use this Mishnah from Sota to ask on Rabba? Why did he ignore that and instead bring a Mishnah from Bava Basra? And the reason is, Duma ksubas isha shiny mishum china. Because the difference is, when you come to a ksuba of a woman, then it's different. You have the matter of chin. So what is the Gemara mentions in a few places this concept of china. On the side of it, here it brings an explanation from the Aruch, which is that because what it is, when a woman knows that there's a much higher likelihood of being able to collect her ksuba, even in a case of suffix, that alone will make her better disposed towards her husband and more willing to do tasks for him around the house and whatever. So that's called chinah. Actually, Rashi and Tosfos discuss this in Ksubas, where the other way of understanding it is that there's two ways of understanding it. Is it that chinah makes it's more likely that a woman is going to want to get married or stay married, knowing that she has a much greater likelihood? No, it's not related to the ceremony. No, the ceremony called chinah that like the Yemenites do is because the plant that they use is it's called henna in English and chinah in Arabic. Yeah. No, this is chinah malosh and chin. So Rashi over there explains, that chen means that similar to what the Oroch was saying over here, that when she knows that she is more likely to be able to collect her ksuba, that makes her more likely to want to get married and more likely to stay married. Tosfos over there discusses that can also mean that it makes her more attractive to men. The fact that she has some money of her own, the fact that she can collect a ksuba from her first marriage makes it more likely that she'll be able to get remarried because she's bringing some money into it. Anyway, so you could argue that ksubas isha is a special case, maybe because of chinah, the chachamim would override the usual rules of suffolk and vaday and allow her to collect, but not necessarily a bal choiv. Therefore, Abaya did not want to bring a challenge from the Mishnah and Saita, because then Rabbah could easily answer in Mishum Chinah, and instead he preferred to bring the challenge from Baba Basra, where we're talking not only about a ksuba, but also about a bal choiv, where there's no issue of chinah. And therefore, you can't say that. So therefore, that required Rabbah to answer, and it's because shtaro oimed ligwis kegobo yomim. Which, by the way, Tosfos points out, Abaya himself holds of that concept also in a Gemara and Ksubas. So obviously what must have happened is he heard that concept from Rabbah, who was his uncle and his Rebbe, and then he accepted it, and then later on taught it.
Rabbah was Abaya's uncle.
And
what about Rabbah?
Rabbah was not related to Abaya. No, that's the Gemara, but in later on in our Masechta, actually, we're going to have about Mibes Eli Kalsu. There's different Girsois over there, whether it's Rabba or Rabba.
Oh.
Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, "Velois v'ksuba demasnisin." So again, focusing on what Abaya challenged Rabba with, instead of going all the way to Baba Basra, why didn't he use our Mishnah? In our Mishnah, Bishama and Bisibal seem to be arguing what you do with her ksuba. Whether the Yoshe Ha'av get it, or whether the Yoshe Ha'av and Yoshe Ha'baal each get half of it, or whether the Ksuba, or whether Basibel says that it goes to Yoshe Ha'baal. So we see that Shammai is arguing in our Mishnah. And the answer is likely. Shammai and Basibel are not actually arguing over the Ksuba. They're only arguing over the Nichsim Alum. So the Gemara says, "Veloy, what do you mean they're not arguing?" V'akatani, the Mishnah says, "Mesa Maya Osa B'Ksubasa, or when Chosim Anichrosim B'Yotzimimah." The Mishnah had said, if she dies, what do we do with her ksuba? And with the nechasim and achnasim v'yotzim imah, the nichsim alug, v'shamayim yachloiku yosha abal and yosha ab, v'salim and nechasim achaskasam. Where v'shamay says that they divide it, and v'salim says everything remains in the chazaka of whom it was in the chazaka to begin with. Meaning that v'shamay on the face of it is arguing about both the ksuba and the nichsim alug. So in that case, Abaya should have asked Rabbah from our Mishnah. Rabbah is saying ain suffolk motzim idei vaday, but in our Mishnah we see that Beis Shammai is allowing the suffolk to get half of it. The answer is no. Hochi kamar. No, what the Mishnah actually means is ma mesa maya osa b'ksubasa. The Mishnah asks, if she dies, what do we do with her ksuba? V'shavka, and then the Mishnah abandons that. The Mishnah asks, what do we do with the ksuba? And then it sets that aside. We're not dealing at the moment with what we do with Huxuba. Then what do we do with Nechnosim, Ayot, Anechnosim, Yotim Ima? What do we do as far as the Nechsim Alug? Veshamim Yachloik, Yoshabalim, Yoshab, or Veselim Nechosim, Bechaskosim. That there, Veshamim and Vesel argue on that. So in other words, even though the Mishnah mentioned both the Ksuba and the Nechosim, Anechnosim, Yotim Ima, we don't have to say that Veshamim and Vesel are arguing about both of them. We can say the Ksuba, they agree that the Yoshe, with the Ksuba, they agree that the Yoshe Abal get, because ain't suffolk motzimi de badai. It's only they're arguing about the Nichsim Alug, where after all, the Nichsim Alug originally came from her father's family and she inherited them. So now, do they have a certain chazaka over them, or does the Yavam have a certain chazaka, and therefore, Bishamai says they split it, and Bishamai says that no. Omer Ravashi must nisin nami deka. So Ravashi says, in fact, you see that if you look carefully at the words of the Mishnah. Dikatoni Yachloiku, Yoshea Baal and Yoshea Ab, because the expression in the Mishnah is that the Yoshea, that the Yoshim of the husband divide it with the Yoshea Ab, the Loikatoni, Yoshea Ab im Yoshea Baal, rather than the other way around. Meaning, it's not because of shtar omid ligvos, because then we would have mentioned that the Yoshea Ab inherit with the Yoshea Baal. In other words, the Yoshea Baal are primary, we would say. We don't say that because after all, the ksuba is not collected while she's alive. So it's only now we're talking about what happened after she died. So therefore, we're only talking about Yoshea Baal, im Yoshea Ab, implying that we're only talking about the Nichsim Malug, which came from the father's side, and therefore we're saying the Yoshea Baal get a portion with the Yoshea Ab. If we were talking about the Ksuba, then it would have said the other way around, because the Ksuba is more on the side of the Baal. So not that we can't relate the two. On the contrary, what we're saying is they're not arguing with the Ksuba at all. The Shammah and Mishil agree that the Ksuba goes to the husband's family rather. They're only arguing about the Nichsim Malug, which she inherited from her father. Does it get split 50-50, or do the Yoshea Ab take it back completely?
We'll have to do this
drop
over again tomorrow.
No, I can review it with you afterwards. No. Okay, good. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem, and we're gonna have tomorrow that actually the Gemara is gonna give a different. So far, we had two answers about the Reisha versus the Seifa of our Mishnah. We had Ula's answer that we're dealing with; she was an Arusa versus a Nesua. We had Rabba's answer that we're dealing with; she's alive versus she's dead. Now tomorrow, we'll continue, Beis Hashem, that Abaya has a third explanation how to understand why in the Reisha of the Mishnah, Beis Shammah and Beis Hillel are both agreeing what we do, and only in the Seifa are they arguing. So we'll deal with that tomorrow, Beis Hashem.